Welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast with me, Kathy Love. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. Join me for cutting-edge interviews with leaders in the allied health and business fields, along with plenty of practical content that you can use to make your business practice perfect. Natasha and I haven't had a good catch-up for a year, maybe more. So, settle in because you can just eavesdrop on what we would have been talking about anyway. Natasha Hawker is the Managing Director of Employee Matters. Welcome.
Hi. Great to be here. It's been too long.
I know. It's been forever. And I've got three cups of tea lined up, so we can take as long as you like. What are you up to?
I am hectic. I think everybody feels like that, but I'm a mum of three, and balancing a full-time job and three kids of, you know, almost 14, 12 and 10 is a big job, you know, and I think business is always busy, and that doesn't change, so that's good. And I think it's about evolution, you know. No sooner have you feel like you've done that project, then you're on to the next project.
Yeah. Give us some first-time listeners. Give us a bit of an overview of Employee Matters. It's going from strength to strength. So, what's the latest?
Yeah. So, Employee Matters helps small to medium businesses hire better, manage better, and if they have to, exit better. And I'm all about building employee assets. I believe your employees are your greatest strength, and they're also potentially your greatest liability. Mm. And so, my big, scary, audacious goal is actually to get banks to lend you money on the value of your employee asset. And the reason why I say that is we lend money on the plant and machinery and all of that sort of stuff. Yet I am of the belief that your employees are fundamental to your success. And you think of Google, most of Google's value is tied up in that enormous brains trust that they have working there. Why aren't we assessing that asset in terms of making a decision about lending a business money? So, yeah, we're going pretty well. We're doing some exciting things. The book's going really well, and the team is growing. So we've been growing 30 to 40% year on year. This last year, we just hit a big number and grew about 18%, and we don't see that changing or slowing down, which is great.
Yay. So I understand you that Employee Matters, and when I introduce you to others, I sort of say they're an HR-ish type company, but so much more. What's under the umbrella?
Yeah. So the two main areas we help clients at the moment would be under our recruitment products. So we're helping our clients hire in a really tight applicant market. We can talk about that later. And the other is that generalist HR person. We are like your HR manager that comes in and out of your business as and when you need us. So, the Australian employee relations landscape is complex. You need to make sure that you're compliant with your modern awards, make sure you're compliant with Fair Work, make sure you're paying the right rates of pay and entitlements to people. And that's complex. But then I think there's a whole other stuff. We're doing a lot. You'd be surprised or maybe impressed by this, Kathy. We just had six team members become accredited mental health first responders.
Oh, so, that's fantastic.
Yeah, they've all had to do exams to be accredited. And we're getting almost, I have to say, sadly, a call a week in that mental health space where businesses, and I can go through the stats later, are really struggling with employees in that space, and they're protected, you know, under discrimination laws. So it can be quite tricky to manage them, but we need to be helping them. So, yeah, we're doing a lot more in that space as well.
Oh, so which topic should we bite off first, recruitment and the workforce, or is
why
that
don't we
just...
start? Why don't we start on mental health, just because it's the last one we spoke about and it's the most recent. So, you know, the interesting thing is that I find about mental health and the scary thing is that it's currently one in five employees in the workplace between 16 and 85 are suffering from a mental health condition. So anyone who's got five employees, the chances are this year someone's going to have a blip. And when I talk about mental health in the workplace, I'm talking about anorexia is one, anxiety, depression, potential suicide, and substance abuse are the main ones. They vary from male to female. But the issue is that we've got, Kathy, is that only 35% of those employees will actually get any support, any mental health support. And as you probably know, if you don't get any sort of medical support, then you're more likely to have a second episode or a continuing episode. And so a lot of employees are really struggling with that. And sadly, we had one of our clients had a suicide in their business only last week. So this stuff is real. It happens. But we need to be much more aware of it and willing to step in and ask people whether they're okay, and help people get better, and help take the stigma away from mental health in the workplace. Mm.
What's your understanding of the statistics of mental health / mental wellness for business owners?
It's horrendous. Actually, entrepreneurs have a really high level of depression. And the reason for that is we're often isolated. It's a very competitive. We're sort of dying on the edge of our sword, you know, we go feast famine, it's always stressful, there's always a problem you've got to deal with. And I would encourage all of your listeners to look after their own mental health. And I have to say, and I'm very pleased I've done this, some of your listeners know me a bit better than others, but I'm a real type A character, and you can probably attest
never
to
noticed.
That.
Never noticed. No.
And I have literally just started doing meditation. In the last...
I saw that on social media.
Every morning I put my ear pods in, whatever you call them, and I lie there and I do it, and I am really getting a lot out of it. And I've been doing some breathing work as well. And so I think I'm starting to look after myself better. And I think one of the things and you know me for a while too, I lost a heap of weight. You know, I was so focused on the business and everyone else, you know, the weight piled on. And then the business started to do better. And I'm like, hang on a minute, now it's time to look after me. And so I'm really focused on breath, on fitness, and on meditation. And it's changing me. It's giving me clarity and making me make better decisions.
Oh, absolutely love it. Absolutely love it. You know, I did say everyone would be eavesdropping. I do meditation across the course of the day. I actually have little micro meditation moments just to kind of contain the thinking department, which runs amok at times. And whilst I'm not super good at the exercise yet, I've been plunging in our 10-degree pool every day for about a month. Yeah,
I'm good nearly on you.
Yeah, how's that?
I did an ice bath for the first time after a breathing session about
a little while ago. Yeah,
and it was amazing. And I was scared of doing it the first time I had the opportunity, and luckily it wasn't on offer. Second time I got in there, and I have to tell you, it's an amazing experience. And I focused that the girl across the way had this freckle on her shoulder, and I'm covered with freckles, and all I focused on was the freckle and the breathing. But I was really pleased I did it, and it did teach me something about how you can control things in your world and block things out when you need to through breath.
Yeah. So we've kind of digressed onto personal energy, and that is part of wellness. But sometimes I kind of read blogs and I read big posts and things about self-care. And sometimes it can be really hard to kind of make those steps towards self-care when you are feeling depressed, anxious, not sleeping and all the rest of it. So I'm a big fan of getting mental health support in your corner as a wellness strategy, actually, rather than waiting until you really need it and you've got to go through the recruitment piece of finding your mental health care team. So I get excited when I hear that people have wellness practitioners as proactive strategies.
I think it's a great idea. You know, and people will say, you know, how do you fit it in? And it's like, I just set my alarm 10 minutes earlier, you know, and I get back that tenfold during the day because I've had that moment to calm and reflect and do what I need to do. So,
okay. So let's go back to the mental health prevalence in the workforce. Some of my coaching clients have engaged employment assistance program providers. Yep. I always get the letters the wrong way around. EAPs, and have been very, very impressed with the service, and very, very pleased that they did, in that their team have utilized it. What are your thoughts?
I think they're an excellent idea, and most small businesses aren't even aware that that service exists. So essentially an EAP service is a counselling service, which is available for your employees to tap into. We've set them up for clients a lot of times, but essentially it means confidentially, and no one will ever know who rang, they can call at any time and get some guidance. Now, as you would know, you know, 1 in 3 Australian first marriages end in divorce. 1 in 2 second marriages end in divorce. 38% of any Australian worker at the moment is worried about their financial situation. 38% have real concerns about their financial situation. So business owners and their employees are going through all these things in their personal life which will impact what they do for you in the workplace. So it's a great part of what we call the employee value proposition as well, when you offer that, because it gives people that ability to tap into help. And some organizations even offer it for their families of their employees, which is another option. So I think they're a great way to reduce absenteeism and reduce people leaving the job, because they're getting that support. They're capped usually at between 4 and 6 sessions. And then if they need further help, then they'll integrate them into the general services that are available to people. But it's a great stopgap, and it can really help a business owner and really help their team, you know, get the help when they need it. And confidentially, you'll get some reports on that if you have over 10 employees, which can give you an indication. For example, if one particular area is always going to get some help and it's often about management, then you've got an issue with your manager in that team. That you need to look into. So I think I think all organisations should have them with those statistics around mental health. And they actually reckon it's getting worse. They reckon the next time they do that research, it'll be 1 in 4. And let me tell you another scary statistic. At the moment, Australian teenage girls, 1 in 3 are already suffering from anxiety. 35% of them are only getting help. And those guys are going to be in the workforce within the next couple of years. So I'm of the view that there is more of this coming our way.
Right. Not quite sure where to take the conversation from here. Should we go for recruitment or retention or how to be an awesome employer? Where's the best spot?
Why don't we go to recruitment? Because I think that's going to be a pain point for all of your guys right now. So
it is. It is.
I'm feeling it as well, because we're helping our clients recruit in this space. So what we do know is it's the tightest applicant market that I've seen in 25 years. I've been in recruitment for 25 years now. And that's across the board. That's every industry. There are hardly any industries where you can take your pick. The candidates are queuing up at the door. But particularly in the allied health space with NDIS and everything else going on, it is a very, very difficult market to recruit in. So the issue that we've got is that people are still scared to move. Employers need to have a really compelling, what we call employee value proposition. What's in it for me? Why should I come and work for you, Kathy? And unless you and your hiring managers can articulate that, you're not going to find anyone that's going to want to move. You're also going to have to get more proactive around your recruitment. We talk about the passive and the active market. The active market is when people are actively looking for jobs, going on to Seek and trying to find the next OT role in their location. That is only 30% of the market. Your 70% and often even more quality of your applicants are actually sitting in that passive, and you might need to tap them on the shoulder or make them interested in coming and talking to you. So poaching is going to become an issue, and we can talk about that in a minute. How do you stop your people leaving you? Because you're going to need to be slamming the door shut very nicely around what, you know, why are people staying with you? So I think the two things that are absolutely key for hiring well, one is become a great interviewer. Have a great process where your candidates feel loved, nurtured, communicated, and valued throughout the whole candidate process. Don't let it drag on for 6 weeks. It is your number one priority. You should be able to say you've got a job on and hire within 2 weeks if you can. The other thing is, be really clear that flexibility is the number one attractor for any candidate in the market. Any businesses that are able to build in flexibility to the way that they work, and we need to get creative here, guys. We've long been conditioned that it's a 9-to-5 job or whatever it is. We need to get creative about job share, flexible working, start late, finish early, whatever. There's a whole market of people out there that want to work flexibly. And my view here very clearly is clients don't come first. I love this quote from Richard Branson. Employees come first. If you look after your employees, they will look after your clients. Mm. And I think people need to refit how they see the employees. They're not just surplus to needs. They are absolutely fundamental to your success, and they're your competitive advantage and should be treated as such.
Yeah. What are some great ways to make the applicant feel absolutely loved and involved and you know, the next necessary teammate?
Ah, great question. It's not as complicated as you would think. Mm-hmm. Most candidates put an application in and never ever hear again. Never ever hear. They've gone to the trouble of putting in a CV and no one ever gets back to them. So number one, communicate with them. Make them feel like they are special. So you might send them a calendar entry to say we're connecting on, you know, 10 a.m. on Friday for your meeting. I'd be sending them a email the night before the meeting saying, hey, Caroline, super excited to see you tomorrow. I can't wait to learn more about you and find out how you might be a great fit to our organization. I'm looking forward to sharing what a great place to work we are and why you might like to consider us. Now, that's immediately framed you in a very different position to actually not even being communicated with. The other one is to get very clear on that employee value proposition. All your hiring managers need to be able to sell why you are a great place to work. They all need to be on point and they all need to have their speaker notes to sell it, because guess what? If you're not selling your opportunity, your competitors are. And that could be the difference. And I think the other thing that I would do is, and it's moving on slightly, but say you've found your great candidate, they are at risk until they start of somebody coming in and poaching them. So keep in touch with them up until the day they start. Why not send them a bottle of bubbles the night before they start with you to say...
You and your champagne.
I know, you know. if we could show them what do you call them? The empty ones on the wall with the label.
Best we don't reason. Right now.
Yeah, best we don't, too early in the morning. So send them a bottle of champagne or something else, a bunch of flowers to say, so looking forward to seeing you tomorrow. Desk is ready. That's the other thing. Get their desk or their space ready. Make sure it's clean. Make sure that the team know they're coming and are welcoming them. And then moving on from that, your employees are at your greatest risk of resignation in the first 6 months that you hire them. That's a really expensive time to lose them too. So make sure they've got an onboarding process. Make sure that they've got a buddy that can help them, that can they can ask the dumb questions to that they feel are dumb. There's never a dumb question. And check in with them. Take them out for lunch or a drink on Friday night. How'd your first week go? We have a whole series of surveys that we give to our clients that they check in on week one, week four, the 8 week mark, and then the 12 week mark to make sure that that candidate is feeling nurtured and managed through the process. That's what I would do.
Yeah. Now, there's a bit of mystery about the employee value proposition. Like, we kind of know what it is, but there could be a bit of, well, I'm not big enough, or it doesn't apply, or it's going to be tough anyway. You can sort of psych yourself out of even thinking about what's awesome about working with you. What are some pro tips for people to think about and kind of plan and discuss?
Every one of your listeners that are hiring people must have an employee proposition, even if it's your first employee. So sit down and literally divide your page into two. Why are you a great place to work? And why wouldn't you be a great place to work? And what I'm hoping is the why you are a great place to work is going to be a really long list. And it might be that you've got a great location, you pay well, you've got fabulous clients, you've got nice offices, you invest in the personal development and the training of your employees. You're a great boss. You're not a micromanager. You empower your team. That you have growth plans, share with them your vision for the future. You know, this is not just a job. This is around bringing you on my journey with me and making sure that we're a team and we're going to work on achieving this together. Talk about how you love your clients and why your clients are important to you. Talk about how you treat your clients. You know, what's the client experience or the customer experience is a really important thing. You know, and then, you know, distill that down into 5 points. And I would suggest you need to put that in your ad. That yeah. needs to attract them up front, but then it needs to be reinforced. People don't remember everything that they remember from the ad way back then. So when you're selling your job, and I think that's a big part of it, you know, when we interview people, don't forget you're selling the job and yourself as much as the candidate selling them job and themselves to you as well. So, you know, this is why we think we're a great place to work. You know, not everybody is going to get a job here because we're actually quite selective about who we choose. As soon as you said that, I want your job.
Yeah.
It changes the power frame.
Yeah.
So, you know, be very clear about have that employee value proposition visual in your office. You know, if it doesn't stack up, if it doesn't add up, you know, if we talk about our team are our most important asset, well then prove it to me. How do you do that? You know, do you reward them? Do you care for them? You know, think about things like that.
I suspect that a lot of the conversation in interviews is very clinical and is potentially a little vanilla and a bit predictable. And I guess to sort of be interviewing like a boss, you need to feel like a boss. I don't like the word boss. That was the wrong word to use. But, yeah, it's a bit of a mind shift beforehand about what you've got to offer, why it's amazing, the impact you have with your clients, who your internal and your external team is, and sort of proudly positioning yourself as an allied health business owner who's got the future in mind.
Yeah. I think that you're touching on that interview process, and I think you're right. There is a very technical part. They need to be able to do the job. They need to have a certain level of skill to be able to hire them. But I would encourage all of your listeners to become great interviewers. It's not a skill that necessarily sits well with everyone. Most people have never been taught how to be a great interviewer, and they've often Googled it or they've watched another not-so-great interview, and that's how they've picked up their skills. So it's really important that you invest. Have some great questions. We've got how to hire great talent, which I'm happy to share with you so you can share with your listeners. But think about some great questions. So to move it away from the clinical side, I believe you need to do a technical, a behavioral, and a cultural interview. Technical is, can they do the job? Behavioral is, past behavior indicates future performance. So putting them in a situation you're going to put them in, if they come and work for you, and exploring how they would work through that, and you'll find these behaviors will pop out. So a great behavioral question is, tell me about a time when you had a really difficult client. What happened and what did you do? And take me to that place where you were dealing with them. What did you say? Take me to where you had that first interaction with them. What did you say? What did you do? What did you think? What did you feel? What was the outcome? And when you drill down like that, you will literally feel like a fly on the wall and watch what they do. The last one is the cultural fit. Are they a cultural fit? You can be the best technician in the world, but if you don't match the culture of your business, they're not going to work out for you. So a great question is, tell me something you're proud of in your personal life. What was it? What's your greatest achievement? I was lucky enough, and this shows my age, many, many years ago when I was doing a postgrad at university, I was lucky enough to interview for the Sydney Olympics, all the volunteers. That's how they got all their volunteers through, for cheap, nice cheap labor. But it was fascinating to find out what amazing stuff people do in their personal life. And so find out about that. Another great question is, tell me about how your best friend would describe you to me in 3 words. You're going to hear about morals and you're going to hear about trust and stuff like that. So get creative with your questions, but ask the same question to each candidate so then you can compare and contrast. That's really, really important. So, but even if you have an interesting interview, they might walk out of there and go, no one's ever interviewed me like that before. I really enjoyed that interview. Kathy's obviously really interested in me and my background, you know, rather than that was a very clinical, same old question.
So,
and share a bit about yourself, you know, let me tell you a little bit about me and why I'm here, you know, start to bring them on the journey with you and why they might like to work with you.
Now, you mentioned you're doing some recruiting work nowadays. Bring me up to speed on what all that looks like.
Yeah, so we're recruiting actually in this space. We're currently recruiting some physios all over Australia. Physios are very hard to find, I have to tell you. We are having to pull out every single sourcing trick in the book. They are there, but they're hard to find. And look, I think people are going to have to get more creative. I think we are going to have to look at bringing people in from offshore. There's just too much work.
It's already happening.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's going to continue. But again, there's a whole other piece. If you're bringing people from offshore, there's a whole other cultural piece. And if you're recruiting rurally, there's another action. You know, your recruitment process becomes that much longer. And you need to have a best practice recruitment process. So if you're recruiting someone into a regional area, up front you need to bring them into the region and share why it's a great place to work in parks. Why should I work in parks? Take them out for dinner. Have an orientation program about here's the school. Here's where people go and play tennis on the weekend. If you're interested in football, here's the local football team. You need to make them fall in love with parks as well as you. So it's a whole other more complex but worth the investment recruitment process. So we help our clients by getting a great value proposition, knowing how to attack the active market as well as the passive market, making sure that they've had a really good recruitment experience and then moving quickly. Because if you move too slowly, you are going to miss out. Those good candidates are gone. So, you know, if you are focused on recruitment, focus on recruitment. You know, make sure that it's your number one priority.
In the next few months, all the new graduates will be entering the market, and I'm bringing this to the conversation because that sits in the active and passive bit as well, because a whole bunch of the new graduates are actually already engaged as allied health assistants in businesses, and for many there will be quite a smooth segue into, you know, fully fledged paid work. Is that something that you're seeing and encouraging?
Seeing it, and also I think there's a whole other piece around the fact that for the first time ever we've got five generations in the workplace, and we're getting a lot of queries around the multi-generational diversity of the workplace.
I'm just doing the maths on five generations. Keep talking.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The Zs, which are where we are now, what they want from their careers is very different. What they expect from you as a business owner, you know, we're all tempted, and I have some grey hairs as well, to go, in my day, that was not the case. You were so grateful for a job and you would stay here. It's changing, and they require a lot more communication. They require a lot more feedback. They are all about filling their skill kit bag next to them and disappearing. They will want a lot of reward. They will want flexibility. So you need to change your mindset. You need to manage everyone as individuals. It's not as hard and fast as saying they're Gen Z, they're Gen X, they're whatever, millennials. This is the way you manage them, because everyone needs to be managed as individuals. But there are some tendencies that that will be important as you manage that next generation of grad that comes through your workplace.
I sometimes kind of hear or get a sense that there's a tendency that the team should kind of be changing around the manager, and this often sits with respect or compromised respect. But I like to flip it over and sort of say, well, you're really the only one that you can change. You can only change yourself. You can hope that others change around you. But going back to what you just said about being a manager, just being the unique manager to each individual in the business, it sounds exhausting and a little crazy, but what are your thoughts?
I think all your listeners who are managing teams or are business owners need to become great leaders. They need to aspire to be a great leader. And that's for a couple of reasons. One, because that's the way they're going to be competitive. That's the way they're going to attract the best people in the marketplace. And also that's how they're going to be successful. So there's a whole theory around people don't leave companies, they leave leaders. And I would encourage all of your listeners to invest in themselves to become great leaders. And the biggest tip is to be authentic. you know, your team members don't expect you to be brilliant at everything. A classic example is if I go and meet a client, they'll often say, I want you, Natasha. Can you come and do my work? I'm happy to pay a premium for you. And I go, actually, you don't want me. You really don't. My team are intrinsically better at this and infinitely better at this than what I am. I play up here now. I don't get in the detail. And having the confidence to say that, and I absolutely believe that, is really important. And also I share the mistakes. You know, I did something really stupid with IT the other day and I share it with my team. You know, I'm very real. I don't know all the answers. It's about our collective value that we add. And I keep it real. So I would encourage your people to learn to educate themselves. I was sharing with you before, Mark and I, my business partner and husband, have spent over $150,000, we're probably up to about $170,000, on our business education, on ourselves, in that whole continuous improvement. This is never done. Mm-hmm. You know, I am always learning. And that's been over a number of years, but I am nowhere the business person I am today that I was 7 years ago. I had no idea what I was doing 7 years ago. And I still got a hell of a lot to learn, but I've learned a lot over the years and I keep going, I need to learn that. I need to get better at that. I need to read that book. I need to and I think the biggest fear for leaders is to have a go. Just, you're going to make a fool of yourself every now and then, but you've got to, unless you trial stuff, you're never ever going to work out whether you're any good at it. And so I think, you know, that's really important. And I think the other thing is, as a leader, is share your vision. We have our strategy and vision on two pages, and it includes our one-year plan, our three-year, our 10-year, what our exit price is, what our products are, what our financial targets are, and the whole team, and there are 15 of us now, all have a copy of that.
Mm.
And it improves our engagement. Our engagement scores sit at 88% month on month. We test our engagement every month. And that's 14 points above the global average. So that absolutely brings back, you know, that's worth that investment. Build highly engaged teams. Be a great leader.
Going back to the learning, and sometimes it's called personal development, sometimes it's called business learning, leadership learning. It demands a shift from your trade, if you like, and it's a mind shift, if nothing else, but then it's also a time shift as well. And I'm always asked about that tipping point of when do you come off the tools and when do you become a business owner. What do you like to say when you're asked about that?
My personal story is when I started this business, I started it out of my bedroom and I was the sole breadwinner. So I actually was lucky enough to pick up a piece of work that was 2 to 4 days a week that I could invoice through the business and then build the business around me. And I remember very clearly for about 6 months leading up to it, that decision to leap off the cliff and just become in my business and just do my business. And the thing is, if you never do it, it's never going to happen.
Mm.
So I am a great believer is part-time's okay. Do it on a part-time basis. Start to slowly pull yourself away from the tools because a lot of us feel enormous pride as being a fabulous clinician. And that's what we're very proud of. But running a business is so much more than that. You may be a great clinician. You may be a great OT, a great physio, whatever. But your business is not going to grow if that's where you focus. You need to work out whether you want to run the business or whether you want to work in the business. And that's okay. You could still do both. You can have a general manager come in and run it for you if you want to stay on the tools. So in terms of interest, again, I would sit down with a piece of paper and go, what do I love about being a clinician? What do I think I'd love about being a business owner and what would that do for me? You know, what would being focused on growing a business? Because it's about the legals, it's about sales, it's about marketing, it's about financials. It is broad and you need to get across all of those pillars in your business to be able to really grow your business well and educate yourself. You know, I've worked with a business coach for 5 years now. Mm-hmm. It's really important.
Yeah.
Being on your own is hard. I've surrounded myself with great people, great businesses, and the amount of stuff I learn off just hanging out with people who are doing the same thing as I am is incredible. You know, I've got some of the best tips I've ever got. One quick example was SourceBottle years ago. I learned from a fabulous businesswoman and entrepreneur, and she went on and won the Telstra Young Businesswoman of the Year, called Tina Tower. And she said to me at her business breakfast, she said, "Have you heard of SourceBottle?" And SourceBottle is a journal where all the journalists go to get their content. And she said, "I just put stuff out there when they're looking for it." Well, now what I did, I followed that strategy and I gave them my best content, gave them a great photo and gave them everything I had. And now over years, they call me. I don't even have to put anything in. If anything comes up in the HR field, they just call me directly. So, you know, that's an example of, you know, just learning stuff from the people around you that's worked really well, you know, and has saved me a lot of money in PR.
Forgotten about SourceBottle. I think I might have disconnected from it a little while back because obviously I hadn't gone in and adjusted the settings to where I was and my thinking was and where my business was. But yeah, we'll put a link to it in the show notes. That's a good reminder. I think the other thing I would add to is the word transition from therapist, clinician to the business owner. It can happen overnight if you want to go that way. I've seen it happen very, very organic, naturally when people are returning from maternity leave. I've seen it also happen when people have been decided to go away for 10, 12 weeks and that re-entry plan is a new stage, if you like. But a lot of business owners perhaps really, really want it, but perhaps just haven't planned the transition from coming off the tools to on the business. And my story was it took several years, and I just released a day a week every year for 5 years. I should have done it in 2.5, but I did it in probably 4-ish. Mm-hmm. And yeah, once I became a business manager and a leader, my business changed shape.
Absolutely, massively changed shape.
Absolutely grew in every single sense. And in my first practice, I worked with 3 different business coaches at different times. I just thought that's what everybody did. It didn't occur to me that other people didn't have amazing accountants and bookkeepers and that they didn't meet with their coaches and employ HR advisors. This is back in the early 2000s. So you really had to scrabble around for stuff. It didn't occur to me that other people didn't do it, and I couldn't have done what I did without that. I just would have floundered not knowing what I didn't know.
Yeah, you need to get out of your own way.
Yeah.
And look, if you've hired great people, they are ready to step up. They want to take accountability. They want the opportunity, and they will support you. They'll be your wingman, and that's what you want.
Yeah, yeah. Now, we've talked a bit about recruitment. We haven't talked a whole lot about retaining people. I wonder if that's a really cool topic before time passes us by. What's the news on that one?
Yeah, I think my concern is for everybody is that if you don't think people are tapping your people on the shoulder in your workplace to say, come and work for me, how about I give you an extra $5,000 or $10,000 to come and work for me? That is going to start pushing wages up because people will be left with no choice but to do that, you know, because they're just so desperate for people. So I believe there will be start to be a bit of a wage war in the allied health space.
It's already happening, a little off the grid, but there's very, very generous invitational funds and very, very generous retention funds at 6 months, at 12 months. You get thousands of dollars.
So people need to be really aware that you know, people are worried financially. There's been a wage freeze on for some time and that won't take much to tempt people. So that is number one. The second thing is, again, comes back to your employee value proposition. It's not just about at the recruitment stage. It's why are we still a great place to work for? And one of the strong things I would recommend your listeners do is to conduct stay interviews. Now, a stay interview is, stay with me. So it might be questions about what do you love about working here? What if I gave you a magic wand to change one thing, what would you change? What will keep you with me for 1 year? What would keep you with me for 2 years? Remembering, too, that people's life is changing. You know, if they've got a child that's going off to high school next year, they may want to pull back and help that that student integrate mm. into high school if that's mm. going to be. So I think we all need to get a lot more creative with how can we keep our people and how, you know, how does the workplace really need to work? I think it needs to be, obviously a lot of your work is face-to-face, it's FaceTime, mm. It's, you know, person-to-person, but it doesn't have to be in the blocks we've always done it in. You know, there are other ways of working and we need to get creative about how we're going to design the workplace of the future. How are you going to make your workplace different that will attract people that will work in that way? You know, my team, I have a team, you know, as I said, of 15. They come to me and tell me the hours they want to work and I build them a portfolio of clients around those hours.
Mm.
They get the flexibility that they desire and they still get to do great work. So that may not be the answer, but think differently. What ask your team. What could we do differently that would attract the best and brightest in our field to come and work for us?
Yeah.
And it's not all about money.
No, and I would add, for some it's money is motivating, but for others, seeing a really cool, well-designed and committed to career pathway is really important as well, so that they can come in as a early career clinician, they can progress through stage one, stage two, stage three, stage four, and can have a clinical leadership role if that's what they want. And that needs to be documented and delivered. It's not just a throwaway line and hope you remember to it, remember to get to it. That really annoys me.
And I think that's absolutely critical, but don't let it just be about clinician skills. Let it be about broader, softer skills.
Yeah.
So whether it might be managing different clients or negotiation or, you know, management skills, you know, that are going to start to set them up for the future. So, you know, and again, it's relevant to what they want to do with their career, and finding that out will mean you'll be able to design some stuff that's ideal for them.
And the examples that we've talked about today in this very pacey catch-up have been about clinicians and therapists. There's also your customer service staff and your practice managers and general managers as well. Absolutely same applies. A practice manager who is an absolute rock star is worth their weight in gold nowadays, and they will be the next trading commodity, as I think they already are. But they'll be shoulder tapping on that front as well.
Yep. So find out what it's going to take to keep them.
Mm.
And do whatever you can, because a quick statistic for you, it costs between 50 and 150% on top of base salary to hire. So you want to reduce your attrition. You want to make sure that when you hire, they stay with you and, you know, that you build a great team, that they want to stay with you as an organisation.
Beautiful. Well, I finished two cups of tea during this chat and I'm mindful of time. How about you have the last say about what you do, why you do it, and how you help?
Yeah, I think for us it's really clear. Your employees are your greatest asset. They're also potentially your greatest liability. We help our clients build assets. I think the best way for your listeners to get started is to read the book that I wrote, From Hire to Fire and Everything in Between, and give it to your managers. You know, it will help them educate and become better managers. And I often say to clients, if you could just do three things better, your profitability and your productivity will increase. Hire better, manage better, exit better. They're the three things absolutely fundamental to your success, your employees' success, and your business success.
Love it, love it, love it. So good to catch up. It really does feel as though we're in a cafe with more than tea, but never mind. We'll do that next time. And we've got to make sure that we get you back in for a chat sooner rather than later, whenever the last one was. So, thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Kathy.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. For show notes and other resources, please visit practicemadeperfectpodcast.com. While you are there, you can subscribe for future episodes and continue your business adventure with me. And please be sure to share this and other episodes with your friends and colleagues.